What's in your thoughts? Oh, what's in your mind? What fills your head and what leaves it behind? It's too much today. It's too much today.
Listeners, welcome back to Filling in the Gaps Rerolled. We hope you had some great gaming since the last time you listened to us. And if you're new to the table, welcome. We may not be an actual play podcast, but we hope our podcast can help you actually play. We are three DMs who create story sessions based on randomized theme and scenario tables determined by two D20s. It's a great way to get those creative juice flowing and flex those DM muscles. With that, let's introduce ourselves. I'll be your intro host for this episode. I'm Sam, or DM Mambo.
I am David, and today I'm going to be rolling on our theme table.
I'm Malcolm, and I'll be rolling for scenarios.
And today, we have some guests, so I'm going to toss it over to them to introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Scott from the Song Salad Podcast.
And I'm Shannon, also, completely by coincidence, from the Song Salad Podcast.
Yeah, we didn't know that each other was going to be here today.
It's actually awkward, guys.
Yeah.
Just going to let you know.
I was hoping for an exclusive.
You know, we had a parent trap, you guys, so... Malcolm and Dave did a great job. They brought you together. We're glad to have you. Did you guys want to talk about the podcast real quick? Give us a little deets. Sprinkle on that cheese on top.
Oh, so it's a Pittsburgh salad.
It's that fancy salad you get at Olive Garden.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you all are here, like, for the salad metaphors, because that is like we were just talking on our earlier recording about how we have like really milked every last ounce out of like being a salad themed podcast. Though we're not a salad themed podcast, we are a music and songwriting podcast. Scott, do you want to recap what we do?
Yes. Every episode, we take a random genre of music and a random article from Wikipedia as a topic, and we combine the two into a short song. So we spin our salad spinner to get those themes and see what happens.
It is a digital salad spinner. Let's be clear. We don't have an actual salad spinner full of like little pieces of paper with suggestions. On it. We randomize a spreadsheet. It's very romantic. But we are thrilled to be here and playing with you all. We love D&D. We don't get to play very often. And it's also just exciting to talk to podcasters that use like randomization as a mechanic like we do.
Yeah.
You guys really should get that salad spinner going, though. That's marketing right there.
Yeah. Says exactly the same thing. Merch store right there. The salad spinner.
I bet not many other podcasts have salad spinner merch available. So we should corner that market.
Yes.
So continue on. I have a question for all of us. What is the best villain motivation you guys have seen in a while? So like if it's in a D&D campaign, DMing one, seen it, maybe it's music. Some of the best villain music you've heard that really sets the tone of, this is going to be a bad guy or girl.
I have an immediate response to that. When you first asked the question, I didn't pop in my mind. But with music, I just recently watched Bo Burnham's Inside, and his song Welcome to the Internet just seems like it would be a perfect fit for a villain. Like, I could totally see that being a scene in like a Disney movie, or it could have even been in like Wreck-It Ralph Breaks the Internet, where they're kind of encountering this thing that is just drawing them deeper and deeper into the internet and kind of consuming them.
Yeah, that song is amazing. Every song from that special is amazing.
That special was amazing.
Malcolm, what about you? What do you think?
If we're going with music, when you mentioned villains and motivation, the first thing that came to mind, I've been watching, today is, we're recording on Saturday, and I hang out with one of my friends. We do Anime Saturday, and we watch all the animes we missed throughout the week. And this is also how he's trying to catch me up on One Piece, and oh my god, it's so long. All this to say, My Hero Academia had like this huge thing where they'd always do like really epic heroics, themes and stuff, and really like fun music. And then for their villain, they chose completely differently orchestral operatic music. And his whole goal is just like, I want to destroy everything heroes stand for. And so you just get this moment where it's like, oh, it's so peaceful and like kind of like, what is this? This is not normal. And this guy walks out and he's like, yeah, no, I'm here to take away everything you find normal about this world. And you're like, oh, it's thematic and it works in. Look at that. So
that's really interesting. And it's funny because in, you know, I studied classical music in school, and there's actually a big resistance amongst classical musicians to movies and TV shows that use classical music as something that evil characters like and listen to, because it gives classical music a bad name. You know, it's like you only listen to it if you're like an evil rich person in a castle or something. So
some terrible Machiavellian.
I won't lie, I do have a playlist on Spotify called Dinner Party that was inspired by the fact that I watched Hannibal and I was like, man, he always has like good music playing while he's cooking up stuff, and like, yeah, I know it's Hannibal, but like, also it's good background music. You'd want to have like something relaxing.
That's
great.
Hilarious. Oh my goodness.
I think for me, going off of Malcolm in the anime, I've slowly corrupted my girlfriend into watching anime, and we're watching Hunter x Hunter right now, and she's like, it's so cute, I love it. And then finally Hisoka came in, and I was like, this is a bad guy. This is a creepy bad guy. And then all of his music and everything, just, it's just so jarring. And I think JoJo's Bizarre Adventure does a great job using music into like incorporating a villain or a good guy. So that's kind of, I think, motivation wise, I think just, I don't know why, but Jesse and James from Pokemon came into my mind. And it's just that, you know, that they want Pikachu, you know, that's their motivation. And they're like, I'm telling you, I'm getting that Pikachu. And they have that whole number that they stick to every single time. And you're like, just let him have it. Let him have the Pikachu already. You can go catch another one, Ash. Let's just go. You start to feel so sorry for him.
They really, like, I admire the purity and simplicity of it, where it's like, you know what they're about. You know what they want. They just say it. They're consistent. Because, and I think that's really funny, because what I was going to say for my, like, villainous motivation, you know, my sort of pandemic journey has been like, in a way, like a therapy journey and like a unpacking your trauma journey. And I have been watching Hacks on HBO Max. I don't know if you guys know it or have seen it, yes. But it's wonderful. It's very funny, very smart. And it's, like, I don't necessarily need to recap the premise of it, but, the villain in Hacks isn't really like a person. Like, yes, there's like interpersonal conflict between the characters, and the main characters you all care very much about, but the villain is sort of like, their hangups and personal trauma and anxieties and coping mechanisms and like how they are expressed to the detriment of themselves and other people. And it's like, you're watching people who, you know, it's painful for them to continue acting in the sort of like quote unquote evil way that they're acting. And I think that like totally the opposite of Jesse and James, like the complexity of like why they are expressing themselves in this way and like why they hurt people in the way that they do is really interesting to me.
And I'm going to talk about Thumbelina.
We watched this together recently.
We did. And the first thing that came to mind when we were talking about villains and music and motivation was Gilbert Gottfried's Beetle character in Thumbelina, and a really interesting scene where he's a beetle and he kidnaps Thumbelina, this little fairy woman. And he dresses her up like a beetle and makes her perform with him in this beetle ball, which is like a cabaret nightclub for beetles. And then in the course of the performance, her beetle costume comes off and all the beetles are shocked and horrified at how ugly she is because she is a woman and not a beetle. And it's just such an interesting thing for a kids movie to take this like clearly beautiful princess character. And when she's in her true natural form, all of the other characters around her are like, ew, oh my God, she's so ugly. So that's where my mind went.
That's the least weird thing about that kids movie, by the way.
Yes.
Like,
yes, it is.
If you've ever seen it or haven't seen it in a long, long time, the way we hadn't when we watched it, like I would recommend a watch because it is wild.
Well, I have two new shows I have to watch. Well, one's a movie.
I need to get to Hunter Hunter at some point.
Just get a box of tissues. That's all I'm going to say.
Ooh.
Oh boy.
Speaking of other things we need to get to, shall we roll?
Let's do it. All right.
So this is the part of the episode where our two lovely normal hosts, David and Malcolm, almost said guest. But it's hosts. Those two, they are going to roll on our themes and scenarios list today. But for a bonus double whammy for advantage, Scott, you said you were going to roll on themes?
Sure.
All right. And Shannon, you will roll on scenarios. And the guests get to choose which combination they like the best. And that is what we're going to roll with today's episode of Dragon Ball Z.
Today I'm rolling my little duck dice. There's a little duck floating in this clear acrylic.
Oh, cute.
And I got a 2.
I'm rolling today my original first ever dice, my pink clear dice that I got because, I quote, the shopkeeper said, well, if you get pink dice, no one's going to steal them because no one wants to say you have girly dice. And I was like,
wow.
Okay. This was great also because the shopkeeper was a lady. So it was just like, she was like, oh no, get these pink dice. No one will have them. And I've used them anytime I've used my first character that I ever made. So he's made a few cameo appearances and different stuff. And I've had to roll for him. And I always use his dice. And I got a 9.
I'm using my gray dice. They were the first set of dice that I bought, and I used them for the campaign that Shannon DM'd that I played in, and I rolled a 15.
I am using this rose gold, actually made of metal dice. So they're incredibly heavy and you cannot roll them on a wooden table or you will damage it, which was not something that I thought about whenever I bought them. They were actually custom milled. A friend figured out that there was some company in China that would custom mill actual metal dice, and she put together a large enough order to be able to order them from this manufacturer. And so I got a set, and I love them because of the feel is just so good, but you got to be careful. And I rolled a 4.
Sounds like it's those metal dice are probably for I was going to say big tray industry, just so they can
big
ask.
Tray.
Yeah. Those nice felt trays. Yeah.
So today our options are for the themes. We have Game Show by LeGravy, and we have Magic Lamp / Wish Granting Object. Ooh. From you, Malcolm.
Woo.
And our choices for scenarios are Getting Lost in MonsterCon by Combi Zombie and Stopping the Hive Mind by Combi Zombie.
Oh, these are great. I want to do them all.
I know.
So do I just choose the theme and then Shannon chooses the scenario? Is that how we're doing this?
Oh, you guys can either collab, or if you want to do it that way, that's spicy too.
Ooh.
What do you think, Shannon?
I mean, I think I know what you're going to go with, Scott.
Shannon knows that I'm going to go with Game Show.
Yes. Because it's a quarter of Scott's personality is Game Show. Yes. Host. So.
So I'll let you choose the scenario, Shannon.
I mean, okay. So here's where my relative inexperience with a diversity of nerdy subcultures comes in, which I'm not sure I know enough about MonsterCon. I can sort of glean what the idea of MonsterCon is, but I don't really know anything about it. And I am actually really sort of fascinated with Hive Mind because, and I hope I'm not tipping my hand too much, but I think fungi are really fascinating and collective intelligence and stuff. And I've done a lot of reading about this. So I'm going to go with Stopping the Hive Mind.
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. Excellent choices. Excellent choices. Should we tell them now that we call the people that help us out in our Discord the Hive Mind? So that was also an inside joke that one of our people decided to send in.
It's a pyramid scheme. That's the whole Discord. Yes. In order to join the Hive, you must sell such and such amount of objects. And then... but I like that. I, you know, the fungi always come out in this show, and I love it.
That was a joke one of the original hosts used to use, because he's like, we don't get to use those enough. I forgot what they're called right now.
Mycanoids.
Mycanoids, thank you. Because he was like, oh, we should make mycanoids. So, like, every so often, every few episodes, he's like, you know what this needs? Mycanoids. But they would never put them in. It was so frustrating.
So my first question is who's stopping the hive mind? Is it going to be a party of adventurers, or is it going to be a radical rebellion of the fungi to make their own new hive mind? So stopping the old hive mind to make a new one.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I guess going a little further on that, it could also be like breaking out of a hive mind that you are trapped.
That's sort of what I was thinking about too. I mean, I guess the interesting thing here is imagining, like, what would a game show in a, I don't know if I'm like overstepping, but what would,
you're perfect.
Yeah. Like, what would a game show for a hive mind collective look like? Like, what would that be? Because if you're talking about like common knowledge, I don't know.
Immediately my thought went to, The Price is Right and having Drew Carey as our main villain for this one. So, Come On Down is you become like the next sacrifice or something like that. And you're in the game show and you're trying to escape from it. So it's like a combination of all like these popular game shows. Ooh. And to break out of the hive mind is you have to win the game show.
I love that. And the other game show example that I thought of was when Jeopardy had IBM's Watson as a contestant, and people had to try and like beat the computer basically. And, you know, thinking of that as like, you know, you must actually compete against and beat the hive mind as part of this game show journey is interesting to me too.
I don't have much to add yet, but we did have Drew Carey on as a villain in one of our earlier episodes. Granted, it was a whose line is it anyway? So, and I think he was a satyr.
Yes.
They were just like these trickster, like powerful things that just like to mess around. So that could come in here as well, where that's kind of part of the magic that's going to separate them is this trickster kind of entity, Drew Carey.
Yeah. So if we went for the other option, which is like, a party of adventurers or like individuals like stumble into this hive mind, like maybe they're not playing, like maybe it's not members of the hive mind playing to break away from the hive mind. Maybe it's individuals who like end up in this scenario where in order to not be incorporated into the hive mind, they have to beat it at a game show. That was my thought.
I don't know what the show's called. I just remember the thing was like, you're gonna beat the beast. And it was like this guy, and he was really, really smart. And I think he lost twice. And that's why the end of the show was because he, the chase. But yeah, the whole thing about it was that like, you had to be smarter than this, like, guy who seemingly knew everything. I don't remember why, but he was just incredibly smart. And the two times he messed up were like things where he was like, oh, it's a split decision, I can't remember if it's this or if it's this, and it was like pop culture and different things. But something like that where you have like a guy who's like the representative of the hive mind that you're going up against might be interesting as well.
Yeah. And is it just about knowledge and trivia, or is it a game show that involves other types of tasks? Like, you know, what is it that this hive mind is so adept at that it can try and beat you that's not necessarily just trivia?
Are you talking about like Legends of the Hidden Temple? Because we can rock with that too. That's a game show.
I'm usually talking about Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Yeah. Did you hear they're doing like a small commercial for Legends of the Hidden Temple? But they're doing a reboot for adults.
Yes.
So that way they can like actually go on and do it. I would go, but my instinct whenever I get scared is like punch the thing that scared me. So. That'd be bad for the temple guards, and they'd have there'd be problems. So,
I was also thinking of maybe Deal or No Deal.
Mm.
Could be a good one. Just a Howie Mandel character, where instead of it could be you're still the contestants on the show, but instead of like winning money, you're winning something to help you. So if you're willing, like, so the inside the briefcases are how long you have to serve the hive mind in order to get what you're asking for. So if you're like, oh, I'm asking for, you know, for my loved ones to be cured of this incurable disease, you're like, oh, they're like, okay, pick which briefcase has that in there. And if you get eliminated, you have to serve this many years.
Yeah.
I think we can combine a whole bunch of game shows in here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to, like, what you were saying about that there's some kind of, like, it's what are you actually playing for and, like, what are you trading? And it reminds me of the first campaign of the Adventure Zone podcast in the Suffering game, where there's kind of not really, like, a good outcome. You're just sort of choosing between, like, two bad outcomes and, like, is the outcome bad for you or bad for your, like, fellow players or for the world in general? So it's like it almost becomes a sort of, like, trolley problem proxy, like, sort of. And then the other thing that I was thinking of was, I don't know if you all play Jackbox games, but there's I forget what it's called, but there's a game where you are answering trivia questions where you have to, like, answer, like, the person who wins the round is the person who gets closest to the answer that the most people gave, which is sort of like Family Feud style, right? Like, you're trying to guess what most people answered instead of actually trying to guess the right answer. So I wonder if there's a, like, needing to know the hive mind or, like, whoever can, like, insinuate themselves best into whatever this culture is that would, like, do best at this game.
I think that game is called Guesspionage.
Yes, you're right.
On Jackbox. And I do love that idea of, like, you know, do you, like, not only can you outsmart the hive mind, but can you make the hive mind think that you're a part of it? Can you trick the hive mind in that way?
Okay, I like that for, like, a stealth mission. When Shannon, when you were talking, I was starting to think about the idea of kind of, I'm sorry, I got distracted by my microwave. It apparently went out at some point. It doesn't have numbers now. But having the idea of, like, so one of the things that we've joked a lot about here on this show before is world-ending stakes. We can't help but get there. And so I'm going to just elevate it there. And it's going to be like, you are the last people and you have to, like, almost not prove that humanity is worth, like, leaving alone, but be like, hey, we're fine. Don't, like, hive mind, don't take us. So the last whatever fantasy species you are, and you're just like, whoa, hang on. No, we have our own reasons to exist.
It's like the floating heads from Rick and Morty. Show me what you got.
Yeah, kind of like that, oddly enough.
We were talking about fungi earlier, and an idea that came to my mind was we could have, like, basically a labyrinth of some kind. And at one end, there's this fungus that's slowly growing along, kind of following you.
Mm.
And at each, like, T or intersection, there would be a riddle or one of these games that they would have to solve. And if they did the puzzle incorrectly, they would get incorrect or misleading directions to where they would go next. And then we have that element of the chase where the fungus is just slowly growing after them. And if it catches them, then they get absorbed into the hive mind of this thing.
Oh, that's, yeah, cool. I like that. Because that would go along with the temple as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, do we want to stick with that one then?
I like this one. What are you guys thinking?
I like it, and I like this, like, kind of combining the idea of a host of the podcast, host of the game show, being this fungus hive mind entity itself, you know, and calling it the host makes a lot of sense.
That's really fun. I wonder too, like, how there are a million, you know, different answers to this, right? But, like, what does the hive mind actually want? And is it that world-ending stakes of, like, we want to, like, whoever the hive mind is, wants to take over the planet? Or do they want something more specific than that, that is, like, indirect, that is, like, more specific than your species just ceases to exist if you fail here? Because, like, what I find, like, in shows like The Expanse, where there's, like, and book, it's a book series too, but, you know, where there's, like, a kind of, like, amoral, agnostic sort of hive or like collective force that like is coming through. Like sometimes that can get a little, not deus ex machina-y, but like sometimes it feels a little vague when it's just like, yeah, they just want more of like whatever they have. So like, I wonder how to make it, if there's a way to make it more specific to the scenario.
I'm wondering if we could do like, maybe they're searching for something specific and that's why they keep recruiting people, is to like, help me go find this. And none of the people they recruit, because they're all just them, it's just more of them searching, is are help are able to find whatever they're looking for. So maybe it's like ancient object, or maybe it's a brand new car, like, you know. So it could be like a lot of different things, but that's what I'm thinking as a way to get around that, because I agree, a lot of times it's just like, now we've created world peace and that is what we wanted all along. And it's like, what if it was a thing where it was looking for that specifically?
So an idea I just had, if we stick with this labyrinth thing, maybe partway through these games, your players can realize that it doesn't know some of these puzzles either. Like, a concern I had was, usually you have to look at like riddles for 3-year-olds to throw at your party just to make sure they're going to be able to complete them. But maybe this, whatever this fungus is, it's trapped in the maze. Like, it can't get out either because it can't figure these things out. And so it kind of pretends it's chasing you as you solve these things. And once you prove you're smart enough, you've proven that you can be absorbed and used to escape.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Another idea I was thinking about is the idea that this is a well-known hive mind and, you know, game show kind of opportunity, and everyone who attempts it thinks they're going to be the first person to ever succeed. No one has ever succeeded, and the prize at the end, if you do succeed, is releasing everyone who's tried in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's fun.
Then as a DM, you can use it as an NPC that your party really likes has been caught up in there, or a family member, or pull some ties. And or even if you have, I always like using a way of weaving in a story of why, like if one person misses a session or something like that, or they have to miss a bunch of sessions. I hate when it's just like, and poof, they're gone. But like just being like, they went off real quick to solve this to help the party, but they never came back. And now the party's like, oh, let's go. And I love the idea of like it just slowly following them through, like the vines are slowly, these myconoid vines are slowly following, because then it gives your party like the time, like a rush, or the essence of time, like if I don't finish this, then I have to solve this. So it's, they get to like an intersection and three doors pop up, and you just hear that like announcer voice over is like, and which door is behind door number, what's behind door number 1, 2, and 3, party, what will be your choice? And then they're like, all right, Jimmy, show me what you got. Ooh, door number 2, rusty set of armor. Let's see what they could have had instead. A magical genie in door number 1.
And these are all things that have been kind of incorporated into the mind. So yeah. Some of them could be like combat encounters when they get it wrong, where it's this like fungusy minotaur that they have to fight now.
I love it.
A little... Oh, go ahead, Scott.
I just said I love it, and I do.
Oh, okay. I was going to say a little sympathy for the devil here as far as the character goes. I was thinking about how you guys were describing the fungus kind of chasing and the idea of, oh, it's trapped in there too. I think it would be unique, especially if we're going to have a thing where we get everybody out, where the fungus is like, no, I've infected these other people to like protect them or to keep them alive, because there's not enough substance down here for them to live. So It is following you, but it's following you to make sure like you're okay. Now it's not going to be able to talk or say any of that, but it's going to be a thing where you're like, oh, this thing's after us. And then it's like, no, it was trying to help, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's really interesting whenever you have a scenario where either your players realize that they've trusted someone that they shouldn't be trusting, or they realize that perhaps there's a way to like turn a situation around and then partner with the thing that was the threat. And I think that that's like, I don't know, I always, when I DM'd the campaign that Scott played in, like it was always really interesting to me to just watch your players like sort of fight it out in like a kind of metagame way of like, well, like, what if we just like tried to like charm this thing? Or what if we like figure out what it wants and give it to it, and then maybe it'll buy us a little bit of favor or whatever. So I really enjoy that idea too.
Yeah, and that gets back to what David was talking about, where like you slowly start to realize that the hive mind doesn't know all the answers to the questions it's posing to you, and that's the weakness you can end up exploiting in order to really win this thing.
And it would also come out that you are also trapped down here too. So that kind of helpfulness that's eventually going to come is when like you're starving. Second kind of side thing, we talked about kind of once you're free, you get to free everybody else. There's got to be some, like, animals that maybe have come in, found their way into the maze. And so now the fungus at the end, like, you've won. You've freed all these people. You also get this new horse.
I love that. I was going to say, this is becoming a little Alien versus Predator-esque. Big temple, people go down there, bad guy isn't all bad, you team up with him to fight other bad guy, get out of temple. So I'm not against that at all. I'm just pointing out the connection there, or potential connection.
Yeah, just so two more thoughts. I know we're kind of like spiraling off in all these different directions.
No, this is what our show is.
It's great. It's so much fun. So I was thinking about like why, okay, maybe that will be my second thought. But my first thought is, in addition to whenever you like release something, I remember playing a scenario where one of my players got stuck in a magic mirror that would like suck people into a pocket dimension. And once the players figured out how to release their party member from the mirror, everyone else sort of like fell out of the mirror. And some of those people were like, people who were happy to be free, and some of them were dangerous things that like you didn't want to interact with. And so you then like would maybe have like that complication to deal with too at the end of the puzzle. And then the other thing I was thinking about is like, why is it a game show specifically? And like, instead of it just being like a more traditional, like dungeon puzzle sort of format, and like maybe it's that there is some kind of like interdimensional or like interstellar angle to it, where this hive mind has like been trained up on like Earth TV programs, or like, or it's like, or if it's interacting with people, like if the party is human or primarily human or something, then it like understands like, here's a format that like a human will understand, versus like, maybe it would be, you know, it would present the same scenario to elves in a different way that isn't a human game show, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm. That makes a lot of sense. Bringing it back a little to Drew Sater, or Drew Carey. This could be like, this is a trap that he brings people in. He tricks them, and then he just has fun making them go through these puzzles in games. He could be that connection where he changes it based on whoever's coming through, and your party just knows game shows, and that's how he's going to play with you.
Hmm. Yeah, because there's a whole slew of game shows we could use, like Double Dare could be one that could be fun, or Fear Factor, and then it doesn't have to, it could be, you know, Hole in the Wall is another one that you could use, and then you can tailor all these different games for each of your characters to like be really good at. And then you can throw in some wacky ones where it's like, oh, this isn't going to be good for anybody. So it's like, let's see.
I forgot about Total Blackout. That's a good one.
Can we talk about it?
Yeah.
Yes.
MXC.
But like, MXC. Yeah. Like, but as a DM, it would be very fun to know what your players' favorite game shows are and then tailor it to this scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And then because you can keep going, like you can even, if Survivor is one of their favorites, they turn left and all of a sudden they're into this beautiful island, and you see a whole like slew of different people that they've interacted with before. And then they have to do a couple sessions of Survivor, and their choices, like if they all get voted off the island and they don't win, then they get, you know, sent to the wrong path, and they're further away from the exit. So they have to do some more shows.
I mean, that could be what's behind the different doors. We were joking about what's behind door number 1, 2, 3. Could be different shows, and that way you can have that where you open the door and it's like, wait a minute, this is an island. And it's like, yeah, you win a trip on an island. And then it's like, oh, wait, this is Survivor? Oh, no.
Yes, that would be great.
That's cool.
I love this.
Also, for those who did not listen to our Whose Line Is It Anyway episode, Drew Sater in our world is a fae. He's not just a satyr. He's very powerful.
A fae lord. We should say a fae lord.
Fae lord, yeah. Okay, I'm really liking how this one's going, though. Like, the combination of putting all of them together. I love that it's a temple. I love that there's this fungus chasing after them if they get questions wrong. This is really cool.
Really fun.
So what other kind of encounters would we want to have thrown in here? So we talked about, like, just the labyrinth thing with a minotaur.
I was thinking maybe the dating game. As someone who likes to do improv and has done it for years. One of the games I was consistently put in was the dating game, and you can have your three contestants be your three players, or maybe just one of them goes up, and you have this scene of they have to figure out who they're dating or who, like, try to get their date. And if they do, then they can successfully move on to the next part. But if they don't win the date, that's when, you know, wacky things can happen. It could turn into an encounter where it's maybe a couple changelings or doppelgangers that they have to fight.
What about game shows, or I guess more accurately, like reality shows where your party would have to work against each other in order to win? Mm. So like your dating game example reminded me of, like, what if it's like The Bachelorette and, like, whatever is behind the door has to choose one of the party to win. And so, like, the party does want to win because that's the only way you get forward. But there is some consequence for the party members who don't get chosen. Like, so, like, and, like, you know, it doesn't have to be like a dating scenario, but it could just be like, okay, like, it's a gladiatorial sort of situation where, like, you need to fight for the pleasure of, like, whatever this being is, and one of you is going to win, but, like, you're going to have to hurt your party in order to do so.
Yeah, like, very much like a American Gladiator tasks and objects. You could also do the Amazing Race too. Mm-hmm. So your party has to team up to go against the other two if it's an even number, or, you know, just throw an NPC on the odd number. That would be a good one too. Different races, you know, if teleportation in different pocket dimensions exist, why not?
Yeah.
For the little back on The Bachelor, you could even have it. This could be one of the times in this dungeon or temple that you could give your players, like, a magic item. So they're in this room that's slowly filling with, like, gas. And so whoever wins the rose isn't affected by the gas, but everyone else is going to take a little bit of poison damage or something. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. For the bachelor or bachelorette, you'd have it be a hag, because they can kind of disguise themselves, and they're really strong. So it'd be a thing where you're like, oh, okay, yeah, fight. Or even the dating game, you have, like, the little, like, if I'm thinking of the right games, Sam, it's the one where they have, like, the cloth and you see, like, the silhouette, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. And so, like, having that, and then, like, if you get it wrong, then it pulls back and it's, like, some monster character you have to fight now, instead of it being like, oh, there was this person. And sorry, Scott, I cut you off earlier. I didn't mean to.
No. I was just thinking of other game shows to incorporate, like, that would involve physical feats, like Floor is Lava, where you have to make, like, acrobatics and athletic checks, and then maybe as you're, you know, just jumping from platform to platform or whatever, some of these are actual, like, lava monsters that fight back and not just, you know, safe places to land. Yeah. And then I was also thinking of game shows or reality shows like The Voice and American Idol that involve, like, some sort of performance aspect. And I wonder how you could incorporate something like that into it.
I was also thinking Wipeout. That's a really big one. Or it used to be. I don't even know if it still comes on anymore, but it was for a while, it was like the slapstick show where it was just like, man, just watching these people get pulverized. And then later on, as you get older, you're like, I really just watch people get beat up on TV trying to do an obstacle course.
I think he's actually coming back with John Cena as the host, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Everything gets a reboot these days.
Yeah. Because USA has pretty much the same show called Cannonball, and The Miz is the host, and they used to be, like, big rivals in the ring. But I was thinking some other game shows you could have that would have them compete against each other is Wheel of Fortune or The Weakest Link, where you could just riddle off some DVD, or not DVD, sorry, D&D trivia, and you can go from there, and then your party has to vote off one of them each round of who's the weakest link, and, you know, one person in your party is going to get really butthurt about it, but if you get, if you're doing, like, American Gladiator-esque challenges, maybe the winner wins a feat, and they get to keep that throughout the whole, you know, rest of the campaign. And that's something that then now people are really motivated to win. And then that's when you really start the inner fighting. And that's maybe when you can start revealing, like, hey, if we don't work together, we're going to, one, run out of food. Two, the hive mind is going to come take us over because he thinks that we have we're one, a lost cause, and two, not going to win. And then we're just stuck here.
Piggybacking on D&D trivia, there could be an interesting game. And I think this is kind of like something from Whose Line, where your party kind of goes in and there's a blocked off section and they get to hear or ask questions of whatever is behind these barriers. And if they're able to ask questions and determine whatever the creature is, it's not going to be released to attack them. So they can ask, like, do you have claws? And then monster 1, 2 will say yes. Monster 3 will say no. And
like, guess who?
I love that. So fun.
I'm trying to look up something here real quick, because a long time ago, I wrote a superhero campaign, and one of the big things about it was I wanted to make everyone a thing basically based off of all the biggest villain cliches, and of course, one of them's got to be, like, a game master or, like a Riddler type, and I was like, oh, so he was the host, legitimately, and I'm trying to find that file so I can pull it up real quick, because I had a bunch of, like, weird and wacky games in there.
Another one would be cool would be RuPaul's Drag Race would be a fun one you could do.
Yep.
Major.
Ninja Warrior is a good one. America's Got Talent.
I was trying to think of a way to do a cooking show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Guys, grocery games, maybe.
What about Cutthroat Kitchen?
Yeah, Cutthroat Kitchen is a good one.
For the cooking show, too, you can be trying to make a meal for another big monster that's kind of jammed down here with you. And if you don't feed it what it likes, it would kind of get closer to your party and do some damage. But if it's content, it'll back up a little bit.
How about we call it Gorgon Ramsay?
Yes!
Gorgon Ramsay! Yes! I think it'd be even great, though, is if you take it a step further and you actually have your players, like, make the recipe. They have to make the ingredients, make the list, and then you're like, all right, go to the kitchen and make it. Like, go. You've got 30 minutes.
It's a great way to make your party give you meals.
Yeah, right?
I was thinking for Gorgon Ramsay, we can actually have him be a Gorgon. So it's like he's got sunglasses on the whole time, and then he looks at you disapprovingly. You turn to stone. So you have all these statues of bad chefs.
He comes in with the bread and he makes the stupid sandwich statue. An idiot sandwich. You can have Big Brother too.
Big Brother would be kind of hard. It's because it's like mostly just people living in a house together.
Yeah, but they have different challenges. It would just be fun. The Amazing Race Survivor is a good one.
Yeah.
There's all the old game shows too, like Two Truths and a Lie and The Match Game, and that are very much about like, you know, fooling people and what's my job.
I mean, I think the thing that's so great about this concept is that it can, like, really and truly, you can play on everyone's interests, because it's not just fighting and physical stuff. It's also, like Scott was saying, it could be performance and charisma based stuff. It can be athletics and, like, acrobatic stuff. It can be puzzle solving and trivia and, like, all of this. Such a rich vein here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like the aspect, though, of having games and such that your players can actually do with their, like, hands, rather than, you know, oh, I roll a dexterity check. I roll another dexterity check. I roll another dexterity check. did I say that I rolled a dexterity check to do this? So I think anything you can think of that will have them, like, get up out of their seats and do it would also really elevate the game level.
One of the first campaigns I ran, I had basically like treasure that made everyone want it. And so we played a game of red light, green light to see who got to the treasure first as part of like a race.
That's awesome. I like that. There was also a Wet Hot American Summer role-playing game that I led once that involved a game of Capture the Flag, where I like put out index cards all over the basement of this house we were staying in, and you had to like pick up the index cards, and some of them were flags, some of them were radioactive squirrels, I think, yes, that gave you damage. So yeah, there's a lot of possibility for, you know, real life games that can break out of these sessions.
That's
real life games full of radioactive squirrels. Also, for anyone curious, I did look up my set of games that I had for my other campaign thing, but they contain things like, and I quote, Roboroo, you fight a robotic kangaroo and try to win. So I don't know if there's like a lot that we can use here from that. So we're just leaving that there.
When you said a robot Roo, I was thinking a robot RuPaul. So.
Me too. Yes.
That is also pretty great. We can use that. That is fantastic. Just animatronic RuPaul, and he's just like, oh, that'd be perfect.
Just a Warforged that hasn't been absorbed. Yeah.
Make it a sassy Warforged. God, that'd be so funny. Sashay for your life.
I feel like we've lost the hive mind part of it a little bit, which is okay, because, like, you know, things go, you know, the hive mind to me just feels like an entry point now into, like, why they're there versus, like, being some like larger element in the campaign. But I do think that like the idea of the hive mind needing skills or perspectives or like knowledge that like the players specifically have that the hive mind needs is, I think that that's like sufficient to me. Like it doesn't have to feel like it's a bigger bad, yeah, than that.
So is the way to win to not give the hive mind what it wants and to be bad at all of these tasks?
Whoa.
The only way to win is to lose?
And that could be something you figure out.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool. I think you can go that route, or it's the route to like, they're either going to take you over to, you know, probe your mind and get you everything you have and leave you as like one of these contestants or bosses in the next round. Or if you win, you get to free everyone who's been captured because the hive mind now gets all of the knowledge and just lets everyone go and like leaves. But I like the way that if it has, you have to lose, very much Jumanji-esque. I'm kind of now, you know, like in that one in the original with the vines coming through, like when they roll, I can't remember what it was, but it was like the vines that grabbed onto your ankles and started pulling you in. Maybe that's kind of what I've been envisioning of that's what's following you. If the hive mind is these vines that are like, once they lock onto you, they start, you know, pulling your knowledge and you start forgetting these things while it takes over your brain.
Why am I running again? Oh, that behind me. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I guess one way that idea could like manifest itself is like, if you do succeed at like a task that involves a strength check, and there's this big congratulations, you win, but then you also like lose a point of strength or something as a result. So it's this like sort of confusion as like, why did I lose a little bit of that ability after winning a task using it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's really cool that like you demonstrating your knowledge or ability is actually, it is being absorbed as you go, and you get weaker and weaker unless you figure out some mitigating factor.
And hopefully you find out in time before you're too weak to do anything about it.
Yeah.
Right. And that would be another reason to make a lot of the challenges individual based as you go, rather than the whole group being affected each time by all of these, so that not everyone is losing steam at the same rate, you know?
Yeah, that's great. I'm also now imagining all like these all these trials and hosts as like the band from Chuck E. Cheese. You know, they're all these. There's these withered old. There's just like husks with these vines sticking out of their back, and they're like, "Come, let's do Jeopardy, Jeopardy." You know, Wheel of Fortune, and then once you win, that's when they finally get to either like, you know, win/lose. That's when they can either give back some power to, it could be very much like if you lose it all, you get to keep all of your skills and pass. But if you win it all, everyone around you gets everything back because you're the more valuable player. So as you beat these tasks and challenges, the people that you have beat now become obsolete because their knowledge is worthless because they couldn't beat your knowledge. So then it's like, so then they get their powers back and they leave, but maybe you, the party, end up being trapped.
What if it's a trade? What if it's like, I couldn't beat you because my knowledge wasn't as good as your strength. So here, take my knowledge and I'm going to take your strength. Huh. And then I couldn't beat you because also I've been in games where it's been like, hey, you your things, we're going to like rewrite your character. I know some people don't like that, but having the sense of like, oh, you're not just losing something. You are gaining this back. It's just the thing. It's like, I don't think this is useful anymore. Take this and I will take the thing that you have because I want that more. And it's this constant swap. That the hive mind's doing to you because it's like, I want to become the best and I want to get out of here. And you clearly have the best skills to get out of here. So I'm going to take and switch out what works and what doesn't. So that's like a reward and a punishment. And that makes it, it also makes it that you're kind of rewriting your character, which is great if you roll terribly or have bad stats.
Yeah.
As a DM, a general note, if you're messing with people's stats, either find a way later on to give them back or see if they're okay with rewriting their character. Just, you don't want anyone coming into the table with negative energy of like, he stole my cool character away.
I had Hercules and now he's got zero strength.
Yeah, just kill them instead.
All right. So do we have any more to add? Any other thoughts, comments, or concerns?
It sounds like we have a few different paths that we can go down with this. I really like them all, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think we can leave this one open-ended a touch. That way you can tweet at us or comment in our Discord which path you decide to take for the DM to take this episode and run with it, please. Let us know what you do. But I think we can move into our recap in synopsis. And for that, so our recap is just a quick, you know, blurb of like everything we talked about, and our synopsis is as if you were DMing it. You pick one scene of like a little trailer of what you would have done if this was a live session. Scott and Shannon, would you guys like to do both of them, or would one person like to do the recap, one do the synopsis? Or if there's one you prefer to do than the other, that's fine as well, too.
I feel so out of practice DMing things. Scott, you've run some one-shots. Like, I don't know if you feel like you want to fake DM something. But I think Scott and I could, like, tag team the synopsis. Wait, no, the other one. The recap. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let's tag team the recap.
Okay.
And then that means, David, you're on the synopsis.
Okay.
So, to recap, this is a session that involves a hive mind that is running a temple or labyrinth or maze in which players need to go through and solve game show-style tasks in order to advance through the maze. And the hive mind can either take away or give attributes to the characters based on how well they do, or also lead them further through the maze in the right direction or the wrong direction, depending on how well they do.
Yeah, and a further wrinkle is whether or not the hive mind is sort of in control of everything, or if the hive mind actually is stuck in the maze as well and needs to get something out of the party or get or use the party in some way to get to its actual goal or aim at the end. What else should we say?
No, that's pretty good, David. You got enough time for you to weave a tale together for us?
I think so. Your party has been stuck on this puzzle. There are holes in the floor of different shapes and blocks that match those shapes. You just can't figure out how to get them into the hole. You're kind of moving the circle over to the square, and it just doesn't fit. slowly you hear behind you little divots being gouged in the stone of the walls of this labyrinth. And you look back, raise your torch, and there you see the vines just slowly crawling towards you, getting ever closer. Finally, your wizard, in a moment of insight, takes the circle and puts it in the circle hole, and it slides down. You've completed the puzzle. One of the pathways forward is lit, and you're able to move forward, and you open the door in this next section, and there's a kitchen inside. This kind of ramshackle mass of vines wearing a chef's hat turns towards you. Let's get cooking.
I really want it to talk now. I really want it to talk. Like, before, I was very against it speaking, but I want it to talk just so it can, like, mock you a little bit.
Oh, man, that's great. Let's get cooking. All right, well, thanks for listening to Filling in the Gaps Rerolled. Our theme music is today by Linby off their album Drive. If you like it, you can hear more from them at linby.bandcamp.com or on the Actual Play podcast Bombarded. You can find us on Twitter. I am Sam at DM Mambo, and our guests are, again,
Scott and Shannon from the Song Salad Podcast. You can find us at Song Salad Cast on Twitter. You can also, as a fun entry point to our podcast, if you're new to us, go to our Bandcamp, songsalad.bandcamp.com. And you can listen to the individual songs and then find the episodes to figure out how the heck we got there.
Oh, that's a fun mini game. Oh,
I love that. I love that a latte.
Oh, and they're called Salad Bar. That is great.
Yes. Yes, our compilation episodes are Salad Bar. Yeah, thank you, all of you, for having us on. We had such a fun time just, like, getting back in the D&D mode. And, yeah, I mean, if you like random stuff thrown together, you will probably like Song Salad. So
they're really great, guys. Go give them a listen. They're really funny, so...
My other two hosts, would you like to continue the outro, please?
Nah, let's just drop it.
I have been David. I was our theme host this episode.
I've been Malcolm. I've been your scenario host.
And you can follow the show at FitGD&D or on our Discord server, which is pinned on our Twitter. We are always looking for new themes and scenarios, and again, I want to thank our beautiful guest, Salad Bar. Thank you for giving us all of our nutrition and daily vegetable intake for today. The show is edited by our audio gremlin, Andrew Brown, and you can follow them at xnubinator912x. We are an Obtuse Studios podcast. You can learn about Obtuse Studios more at obtuseaudio.com. And as always, don't forget to give both our shows 5-star reviews on Apple iTunes, because, boy, we need that. This has been one heck of an outtake. Outro. Well, you know, goodbye.
Colorful living is not quite like me. Plainly, I find it's too much to see. It's too much today. It's too much today.
Obtuse Audio.